She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, which is why we're having a show this week on bottled water. We want you to think and then decide what you really think about water. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Habitat for Humanity, one of my favorite organizations in the country. Their goal is to build safe, decent, affordable, quality houses for people in need, and what a great job they're doing at that. I am on board with everything Habitat for Humanity has going on. They give people a hand up, not a handout, and I love that. You can learn more about them by visiting their website at habitattucson.org. If you're not in Tucson, just Google Habitat for Humanity, and there is one near you. So everybody, sit back, relax, and put your thinking caps on. I rarely say that in the show, but this is going to be an interesting one for Mrs. Green. The name of our show today is Waiakea, Hawaiian Volcanic Water. Yes, really. Our guest is the very passionate and enthusiastic founder and CEO of Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water, and he has quite a story to tell about his journey and why this water is truly unlike any other bottled water in the world. He's being called by some one of the youngest and brightest CEOs in the food and beverage industry, and from what I've read about him, he owns that moniker quite well, and he clearly represents the next generation outlook on the controversial an omnipresent plastic water bottle. And what a big deal it was for me to take it on when Kelly called me. She goes, there's someone that wants to do a show on bottled water. And I was like, what? So anyway, I read about it and I said, this man deserves an hour with Mrs. Green. So welcome, Ryan.
Well, Mrs. Green, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
It's a great story. I mean, it is really a great story. So let's start with the story of how the company began and where was the idea born in the first place? That's Hawaii is to me, if I die and go to heaven, hopefully I will come back and live in any of the islands in Hawaii. So you got a big fan there. So how did you get the idea?
There we go. Well, so I it was kind of a long story, but I'll make it brief.
We have time. I want you to tell the story. It's a great one.
Thank you. Well, I was really involved in clean water NGOs in high school, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. And I actually was born and raised in Santa Barbara, but also spent my summers and winters on the north shore of Oahu in Haleiwa. And so very blessed to grow up in both those places. But obviously, one of the things that they share in common, other than their beauty, is their appreciation for the environment and stewardship. And so, you know, I grew up in the ocean, and I grew up hiking, I grew up rock climbing, and that was really very important to me in whatever I ended up deciding to do. In addition, obviously, the nonprofit world. And so, you know, I had no idea I was going to get into bottled water at all. It's kind of the exact opposite of what I intended. And I started to kind of research the industry. I got admitted early into this entrepreneur program at USC's Marshall School of Business. And I started the program early. And when I looked at all the different aspects of water, from desal to water infrastructure,
right.
How we use water for agriculture, everything. And I was kind of obsessed with water because it's obviously becoming even more of an issue in this next century. And when I thought about a company that I wanted to start, I thought that I could actually do the most and even though I had tons of obstacles and barriers to entry and was very capital intensive, I actually thought that I would be able to, if I created a lifestyle brand that was very scalable internationally, but promoting the clean water issues that we have and are going to continue to have for the next 100 years, then I could kind of sleep at night. But at the same time, I really looked at bottled water and I saw a huge issue. And the issue was that there wasn't a single bottled water, let alone a premium bottled water, that was addressing consumer concerns, which were obviously towards the environmental impact.
Right.
And when I got really into it, what I realized is that there was a systemic problem with the entire beverage industry as well, and that it really wasn't just bottled water. The bottled water was really demonized as the face of this environmental impact. And so my goal in Waiakea was to really create positive industry change from the inside out, not just for bottled water, but for the beverage industry as a whole. And so kind of opening up a level of transparency and accountability that hopefully would affect the rest of CPG. And we have a long way to go, but realistically, when I looked at it, bottled water is unfortunately not going away. And I always encourage, and I myself drink tap water when I can. But with that fact being said, the only way that we're going to create real, positive, and lasting change is going to be through the inside of the industry. And so that's kind of the platform for how IKEA was built. And it's now, our platform is basically, it's embodied by our slogan, which is, drink healthy, drink sustainably, drink ethically. And those are the three pivotal parts to our brand that I think make it really special and really make it resonate with a lot of people.
And I actually wanted to go into some of those specifically because it's really important. You have a lot of what I call content-rich information on your website. But going back to the very beginning, you said that you realized your family had access. And I know how to say Waiakea, but I don't know how to say the is it K-E-A-A-U, the aquifer at the bottom of Mauna Loa Volcano?
Yeah, it's the Kau aquifer.
Kau aquifer. What do you mean
so you did really well.
Access to, I'm trying, man. I'm on, thank God for Google. I go on, how do you pronounce blank?
No, of course. So unfortunately, that's probably not gonna give you a proper translation. But my family has access. We have a 99-year exclusive lease on a well in Hawaii, my Hawaiian family. So I am, all my cousins are Hapa, and my mom grew up there. And basically, the thing with Hawaii that's very different than anywhere else in the country and even the world is the fact that the resources really belong to the Hawaiian people.
Right.
And this water belongs to the Hawaiian people. You can't own an aquifer. And that's actually one of the things that I like, but maybe investors might not like.
Right. Doesn't show up great in the business plan.
Exactly. We have permission by the state and the people of Hawaii to access the water very much within the sustainable yield. And that is something that obviously is very weird in the context of what we're seeing in California and all the water privatization that's happening worldwide. So that's really how it happened. And we ended up actually, we still have the 99-year lease, even though it's not associated with my family. It's just the company on a separate well. And
right.
We were very lucky because it was one of the first ones to be available in a very long time. So that's where that comes from.
And when you talk about it on the website and in other sites that I visited, talk about drink healthy. We are really talking about naturally healthy water. What's the magic in the water?
Yeah, so the water itself, and that's what makes Waiakea very special. Yeah, I think it's pretty magical too. So, you know, it's not like another alkaline water that's just, you know, filtered tap water from the municipal system that's rebottled and sold for a ridiculous margin. It really is very special. It goes through about 14,000 feet of porous volcanic rock through the Mauna Loa volcano. And it basically percolates through all that volcanic rock, originally from both snowmelt and rain. It actually rains 360 days a year in Hilo, which is pretty remarkable. And so that unique process makes it enriches it with all these fantastic trace minerals, magnesium, calcium, sodium, and actually a really unique value is silica, which is really good for your hair, skin, and nails, and actually has been shown naturally occurring in water to reduce the chance that you have Alzheimer's.
Potassium.
Even though
didn't I read that there's potassium?
Yeah.
Like,
potassium
we need
as
that.
Well.
And it's not
again,
easy
it's...
to get potassium all the time with our lousy
and
diets.
The thing that's huge here is the fact that it's all natural. You know, this isn't another GMO water with added electrolysis or baking soda. Well, yeah, I actually really think that I believe in natural occurring minerals. I think they're really valuable. And granted, you know, I'm the first to say we are not a mineral water. It's a very light TDS or total dissolved solids.
Right.
But it's this really unique combination that also makes it one of the most naturally alkaline waters in the world. And it's alkaline for all the right reasons. It's alkaline because of the naturally occurring alkaline minerals, magnesium, calcium, etc. This also gives it a really smooth mouthfeel and a really great taste that's fairly unique. And I think it's a pretty fantastic product.
You know, I was kind of laughing, Ryan, when I was doing it in a good way, saying, you know, I don't drink much bottled water, and that is, there's people that'll stand in line to tell you, yeah, she's not a big bottled water person. But if I drank it, well, this is really making me think, and that's what the show is about. So is there such a good thing as good, ethically sourced, for the greater good? I drink this and people get helped in Africa. It's why I got excited about the show. But is there, what does it taste like to me? All bottled water. Like, I have a friend that drinks Fuji water. I'm going to break him of that habit when I go see him on vacation. But it's like, I read about Fuji water, and it's like, I'm from Jersey. Forget about it. Don't drink Fuji water. It's like, ew. But your water, if I tasted it, would it taste any different? Or did it just taste like refreshing, delicious water?
It tastes like refreshing, delicious water.
It's like
a little
we got
bit
in
smoother
our well.
Because
yeah.
of that silica.
Okay.
And it actually does taste somewhat similar to Fiji, except for there's a slight, what's called, it's technically a wine term, which is ironic, but it's technically called a hint of sweet, which occurs in the aftertaste, and that kind of lends itself to this kind of unique smoothness. So, but I think you're going to have to find out for yourself, and we're going to have to have you try it.
I am going to have to try it. And later on, I'm going to ask you about the taste and the terroir, which I thought, oh my God, I'm going to love this show. Okay, part two of what you really market about and share a story with us about is the very critical piece that I loved, drink sustainably. What does that mean to you? And what has been the response from people, including the Hawaiian people? Drink sustainably. Who even uses those terms except Waiakea? I love it.
You know, that's good, and you're supposed to, because that's really, so our whole brand is focused on this kind of, we're in the process of being a certified B Corp, benefit corporation, and the whole part of it is we really want to be the first triple bottom line premium bottled water.
I love
so
it. People, profit, planet, everybody.
And profits, exactly.
Yep.
And, you know, so with the sustainability, first and foremost, it starts with the water itself. And this is obviously very top of mind for everyone that's living in California, obviously everyone in the U.S. that is very much aware of the drought that's happening. And our source itself, the Kao Aquifer, has a recharge rate of 1.4 billion gallons a day.
Oh.
And to give you some perspective, that's enough to provide all of the bottled water consumed globally annually in 3 months. So we're talking about arguably one of the most sustainable freshwater resources in the world. And the sustainable yield of that aquifer on a daily level is 776 million gallons a day. And we are bottling literally 0.00001% of that. And it's all very much in conjunction with the city, in this case, Hilo, and the state itself.
And you know what, Ryan? I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm more like Pollyanna. It's all going to work out. It's all going to work out. Hope, possibility, change, right? What struck me when I was reading that particular page on your website about drinking sustainably is like, let's keep hoping that it's safe and that you don't start having people trying to get to the water. Wars are started already over water. So keep that water going and keep it safe and embrace all of the beautiful relationship you have with the Hawaiian people, because it's going to matter more and more and more every second of every day. So there's the little Mrs. Green rant about it's...
No, you're totally... No, I think it's great, though. And you know, so we're actually going to be speaking of that. Actually, first I'll say, do you know the actual definition of the translation of Waiakea?
No.
Did you see that
now
anywhere?
Now you're getting me,
well, so
man.
That, so the translation is actually one of the translations is actually broad waters, and
wow.
And so, and that's to reflect the fact that it is such a sustainable source, and that's the actual specific ancient subdivision where Waiakea gets its name from within Hilo, and so. But going back to sustainability, it's one of those things where, once again, we will preserve the source, and that's why it's so nice, because Hawaii, again, there's no privatization of those resources. But it's a lot more than just the recharge rate for us, especially me, like growing up in the environment. I mean, plastic waste is a huge issue, and so for us, you know, even though it's so expensive and it made things really tough for us to stay alive because our margins were so low, you know, having sustainable packaging was also another huge thing. So, you know, all of our cases are post-consumer recycled cardboard. Our bottles themselves are made out of 100% post-consumer recycled PET.
Huge.
And so they in themselves actually have... It's huge, and some people are still obviously, you know, are going to be against any plastic bottle, which
right.
I totally understand.
Right.
But when you take a step back and you look at the statistics with regards to this RPET that is already BPA-free, and you look at the fact that it has a 90% smaller carbon footprint than regular PET, and an 85% smaller water footprint, and, you know, 85% less carbon emissions, and you know, it really ends up adding up. And then you also see the fact that it actually has a smaller carbon footprint than glass because of the weight. And so we looked at all of these things in detail, and we looked at glass. And really, in a perfect world, the one thing that we have that we are really working really hard on right now is we need an end-of-life option. I don't want any plastic waste. And we still need to encourage recyclability, but we need a biodegradable bottle that has an end-of-life option that can still be recycled. And so that's actually something that we're hopefully going to have done in the next 2 years here, where we will actually be the first bottled water to be made out of 100% RPET that also will have an end-of-life option in anaerobic and aerobic environments.
So it'll actually be able to biodegrade. Oh, my God. You have to tell your people that when that happens, one of the first news organizations to break the story is Mrs. Green's World. Oh my gosh, it's great.
I would love to have you guys represent it when we do it, and we're getting close.
Oh my gosh, it's really unbelievable. We have 2 minutes till the break, and there's so much more to talk about. I told you it would fly. Can you quickly answer, what do you mean when you say you utilize low emissions shipping? How so?
Yeah, so what we do is we basically do, we're doing a couple different things. First and foremost, we're always looking to employ zero-emission fleets, hybrid vehicles in our shipping and in our freight, which is always the first thing. But we also, what we do is, with all the operations from Hawaii, we're basically focusing on any tankers that are going that have empty spots.
Anyway,
that are already doing routes. And so that is actually slightly minimizing, not in a big enough way that we're trying for. And that's why we're still working on, you know, having these zero emission fleets. But it actually is more impactful than you would think. And so that's what we really try to focus on.
Even the lightness of the bottle and the lightness of the packaging, all of those things, I mean, they are all part of huge carbon footprints. So everybody, believe it or not, we're going to have to take a break, and you're getting to hear Mrs. Green ask positive questions about plastic water bottle use. I can't wait to see the emails I'm going to get. So everybody, stay here with me. We're having a great discussion with Ryan Emmons, who's the CEO of Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water. Stay here with me. Lots more really good stuff to cover.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And what a great show we're having with a thought-leading thinker. How's that, Ryan? Did you ever think you'd hear those words come out of my mouth?
No, I mean, thank you. Really, I'm blushing, but
I've had some people on my show and they're like, wow, you know, thanks for having me on the show. I never thought a greeny show would have us on. And, you know, we're not really a greeny show. We're about telling the truth and, you know, hope, possibility, and change, and getting people to think, not telling them what to. So your story is wonderful. Ryan, if you just joined us, is the CEO of Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water. He is just really changing the way that people think about taking responsible for drinking out of bottled water and all that that could mean. So, Ryan, thank you so much for being with us. And let's talk about, is there anything else you wanted to say about the low emissions shipping and the carbon neutral before we go on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll touch on it real quick, is the fact that, so we actually, we're going to be very transparent, and in the next couple months, we will actually have our full Ecometrica carbon audit available online as well. So everyone will be able to see kind of what we're doing. And Ecometrica is really fantastic. It's actually the carbon audit version of platform of Deloitte, which is obviously one of the most reputable big accounting firms in the world. And it's really extensive. And so that's kind of, we really are trying to be as transparent that we are doing everything that we can to really offset every single aspect of our business.
And I have to say, I totally believe that. I looked, I said, what are the, you know, I always have to do the other side of midnight. What are the critics saying about it? And on. And I just, like, this is a go. And I'm gonna get a bottle and I'm going to taste it, I swear. And I might hide.
Awesome. There we go.
I will tell people. And here's another reason. So drink healthy, drink sustainably. Let's talk about drink ethically. To me, one of the most critical components of your mission-driven company, topic very near and dear to my heart, is how you are giving back in such a big way to people that don't have access to clean water, the 783 million. And I think that number is under-exaggerated. I think it's more like 1.5 billion. So tell us about Pump Aid Water for Life. Just talk about how that started, why you incorporated it.
Yeah, I mean, so
it's a core value.
Foremost,
like, dude, I love this.
Yeah, well, so I was really involved even going back, I mean, to high school. And,
right.
You know, when you look at, I mean, the statistic that you just brought up, it's around between 750 and 800 million people that lack access to clean water. And when you think about that, I mean, the fact that that's, you know, almost 2.5 times the United States population, that is ridiculous. And it's unacceptable. And the fact that it still is not being addressed, you know, thank God we have people like Bill Gates that are creating these incredible machines that are able to, you know, convert waste to clean water. And so we're having there's a distinct possibility that we can make one of the largest impacts in the next 10 to 15 years. But, you know, 840,000 people die each year from water-related diseases.
It's again, the number one killer. I just did a show on that. It's the number one killer. Waterborne diseases.
It's more than the entire city of San Francisco. That's just, it's obscene. And so, you know, and that's not even people that are at risk,
right.
You know, which is just even, which is almost three times as much. So we looked at this and we basically, I couldn't consciously get into bottled water if it wasn't to promote something on a global level. And the thing is premium bottled water, when you look at it, it really is the most scalable beverage category in the world. And so there was no better platform for us to promote the global water crisis than with our product and then with Waiakea. And so for Waiakea, what we actually do is about 7.5% of our sales.
Wow.
Goes to these clean water projects. It's actually the most of any premium bottled water, one of the most of any bottled water period in the world, other than those that are actually nonprofits. And, you know, we thought about actually being a nonprofit and having 100%, but realistically, we thought that we could do more because we could scale a private company as quickly as possible.
Right, stay in business,
and thus we could actually end up having
back. Yeah.
Exactly, and that's why the power of the benefit corporation, which we're working on, is, you know, that's the goal. And so our projects are really going towards mainly installing these UN award-winning elephant pumps. And we've mainly worked in sub-Saharan Africa and in Zimbabwe and primarily actually Malawi. And we are installing these elephant pumps, doing community work and also doing sanitation work in conjunction with our partner, which is Pump Aid, which is actually based out of the UK.
I want to have them on the show. I do. I saw that. I'm like, they would
you
be
should,
such a great
guest. They're
guest.
Incredible.
Oh, they'd be so good.
We spent 6 months deciding who we were going to partner with for our clean water work. And at the end of the day, when we looked at, you know, making sure that every cent of our money was going towards these specific projects versus the infrastructure of the NGO, that's why Pump Aid. That's why we picked Pump Aid. Because that was our worry.
Yeah.
With so many nonprofits around the world, it is the worry that you're going to see 50% of your donation actually go towards the intended projects, and the rest is going to go towards, you know, salary, infrastructure,
right, administrative overhead.
Or bullshit.
Yeah.
Excuse my language.
No, I like
exactly.
when people curse
and,
on my show.
And I wasn't okay with that.
No, it's
yeah,
amazing.
So, and I can totally arrange that easily.
I know. There's only one bad word I haven't said on the show, and it's in honor of my mother. I have been tempted to, but there are others that I have. But let's talk about this whole concept of, like, to me, when somebody says to me, did you know that every 20 seconds a child dies from a water-related illness? I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, knew that. Mrs. Green should know that. What I think is important that you help provide is that it doesn't just save lives, which it literally does. It has a lasting, what I call, pebble in the pond impact if you can provide clean water to a village or to one family. Can you talk a little bit about that? It's systemic change.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that systemic change is really rooted in the economic and the academic impact, which are really, in many ways, one and the same. If you grant clean water access to a small town, let's say in Malawi,
right.
You are allowing them to have clean water, not have to worry about all these different diseases, and not have to worry about the travel, which is for many, you know, tens of miles.
Takes kids out of school. I mean, all that stuff.
It takes
really
exactly, and so many kids go with their parents. You know, and they're going, they're traveling so long, and they're traveling so long for water that isn't even clean. And that's ridiculous. And so when all of a sudden you take that and you completely reverse that process, what you end up with is more time for a mother to farm.
Right.
That means more income for her family. That means more time for her kids to go to school. And so you end up seeing these communities that are absolutely thriving. And then on top of that, what's fantastic about Pump Aid is they actually employing community ambassadors that are also teaching everyone in the town certain sanitation practices to really continue, instead of just installing elephant pumps, doing the sanitation work, and then moving on to the next town. So it's really a continuous effort that it can be, you know, we're talking about sustainability. This is another form of sustainability. It's a sustainable effort that, like you said, has a lasting impact on the community.
And it's one of the things that can change the world the fastest, because the World Health Organization certainly doesn't have a grip on it. I'm very involved in Rotary, and our whole mantra is to end polio. And polio is all hooked up with dirty water and mosquitoes and all of that. So it's a really big deal. The Gates Foundation has given Rotary, I think, $500 million to help us to get rid of polio. I mean, it is a really big hot topic. What about?
Yeah, and you know, no, go ahead.
No, I interrupted, and I love it. Give me, what were you going to say?
No, you didn't at all. Please, no, ask away.
Well, I want to know, this is always the big thing. First of all, acknowledging it's such a great idea that you picked a partner to do that end of it, because you're in the business of providing clean, nutritious, all these words coming out of my mouth are pretty funny, bottled water. There are very, very good aspects of your company and what you're doing, but you're not a pump aid water station. So picking a partner to me is such a good idea when you have a big company. Partner with those that do it best. And of course, I wanted to know, how do they pick the communities that they work with? Because there are so many. And you might not know the answer to that.
Yeah, so they, you know, they have a lot, an extensive list. And they're going through, and they have so many people on the ground in Malawi. And so, you know, they have this really incredible relationship with all these different community ambassadors in both communities that they've already done at the very least a minimal amount of work. And then what really happens is that, you know, they're doing with those people on the ground, they're doing surveys and going from town to town. So, you know, it's not like there's ever going to be one community that, you know, is going to be prohibited from participating.
Right.
They really are looking at everyone.
Yes.
Exactly. There's infinite opportunity.
Infinite,
but at the same time, they are focused on, there are reports, even though it's not the same as the U.S. in terms of being able to calculate the, you know, per average per capita income of a city or a town. It's obviously, you know, you don't have access to those same statistics, but they are to a certain extent available. And
right.
So that's really those are the small towns and communities that are prioritized as much as we can.
It's just, I mean, people should really go and look at your website, because it's fun. It'll make you feel really good about what you're doing, and might move you, as it does me, to occasionally purchase one. If you're out, I'll find one. I just don't do it. So now I'll know, because we're going to talk a little bit about your journey to getting into Whole Foods. But something I want to ask you that's a personal question. With your journey and all of your awareness about water and water scarcity and the, you know, diseases related to it, has it made you a much more conscious consumer about water? Like, I'm a water, like, nut job about wasting. We do not waste water in this house. My husband does not waste water. When our grandchildren come, nobody wastes water around here. What's happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, in terms of my, like, habitual practices, 100%. I mean, I, even when I wash my dishes,
right,
I have, like, one basically large container of water, and I'm reusing the water.
Wow.
And wow. It's funny, because I actually, you know, I learned that from my mom.
Awesome.
My parents actually, over the last 3 years, have reduced their water usage by 75% each year. And
that's
so,
amazing.
You know, my mom's
like,
actually been really, really awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's great. And the problem is, you know, it's really still until our water, our utility prices get up, consumers in California really will not be forced to make significant changes. And that's the reality. And I don't want to have people that have to, you know, pay more of their precious income for for this, but unfortunately, that's the only way. Obviously, if there are other ways, but that's the only way we can make an impact on an individual level in terms of just our daily recreational use. Now, the problem is, not to get off topic necessarily, but the issue is not as much that personal use as it is really our agriculture and our industry.
Totally. Industrial use. We can't even shake a stick at it. It's so gross.
This is the way, the fact 10%, of our overall usage of water is for domestic. That's nothing. 70% is for food production and 20% is for industrial. And the whole thing is we just don't invest enough in sustainable water management and infrastructure when realistically those will be extremely lucrative businesses for our government and for the companies that get into it. So much is wasted with little to no repercussions. And partly it's because of all the lobbying you see that, we don't really see the other side of.
I am so glad you brought that up. And it's so relevant as far as I'm concerned. We can do all we want to turn our faucets off and get high-efficiency toilets and take five-minute showers, but go out and see them raising non-indigenous crops in Arizona that are water-intensive, and it doesn't freaking rain here for, 7 or 8 months, and they have pecan trees. Really? Wow. That's smart.
Oh, yeah. There was actually this morning, it was super relevant. There was actually something on NPR where they were talking about specialty crops in California and how, at one point, oranges used to flourish in California, and now they're just completely abandoned because of the water use. And, unfortunately, there's still certain crops that we still spend, they just consume so much water. And obviously, I love almonds, but
I was going to ask you, what did they say about almonds? They're just going away.
but the thing is,
they are.
The thing is, it's one culprit of many. And the thing is, we're, because of pricing and because of the availability, it is forcing farmers to reconsider other crops. And this is like a cycle that's actually happened over the last 20 years. They've considered specialty crops based off certain situations and certain factors, and those specialty crops have then, become more mainstream. So we're seeing that cycle again. But the problem is, now it's just our water table is so low that, you wonder if we can plant anything.
You can. And then the other thing is,
combined with climate change, it's just like not a good situation.
No, it is not a good space, especially at your age. My husband and I are like, well, at least I'm going to be 65, speaking for myself. But we want to fight even harder because we want that shift to occur because of our wonderful children, grandchildren. And, a couple months ago, I read an article that Bloomberg wrote. I love them. And they said it was something like, cows suck up more water than almonds. So if you're looking at intense water use, pick Meatless Monday, people, because the cows are sucking up the water.
Do.
Yeah.
100%. And like 106, okay, to give you, so I talked about almonds. So 23 gallons of water are needed for an ounce of almonds.
Ugh.
Okay? You think that's insane. So that's right. About 23 nuts. But imagine this. 106 gallons of water goes into making just 1 ounce of beef.
I know. It's really sad.
So the best thing you can do for California is to go vegan.
It's so true. And I got news for you. A lot of people are going to be doing that whether they like it or not. I mean, we just drove there for 4th of July from Tucson to L.A., and some places look like a tinderbox that used to be green and lush and beautiful. Now it looks like desert waste. I'm not kidding. It's really scary when you go and see that.
Yeah.
So we're going to have another break. I hate these breaks, man, but it's, we have to have them on the show. And when we come back, we really do want to have some fun. And I've been having fun the whole time. And tell us about taste and terroir. And I want to know, what does make people choose one bottled water over the other? What are they looking for? It's not an experience that I have had. I just look for the cheapest if I have to buy a thing of water. So we have a lot of things to talk about. And then I want to get your spin on, some people on the show have said to me, our city water is awful and nobody should drink it. Well, that's research-based, not true. We have pretty good city water here in Tucson. We have one of the highest standards. And then I'd like you to share with me, I always want to know, how did you get in Whole Foods? I don't have a product to sell, but I know our friends have a company called Isabella's Ice Cream that started here in Tucson. And Ryan, oh my gosh. I mean, people would go down and just help them pack the ice cream so they could ship. So everybody, stay here with me. Lots more fun. I know. Getting a grammar ship. Lots more fun. We're talking with Ryan Emmons, Waiakea, Hawaiian Volcanic Water Company. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. The name of our show today is Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water. Yes, really? Our guest is the very passionate and enthusiastic founder and CEO of Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water. His slogan is drink healthy, drink sustainably, and drink ethically. And he has certainly given lots of thought to that and reasons why this is absolutely true. It's the first U.S. bottled water to be certified carbon neutral with a 90% smaller carbon footprint than competitors. Ryan, thanks for being with us. And before you come back and start answering more of my questions, everybody, I'd love you to press pause when you're listening to my podcast and consider becoming a sustainer. My team is really getting on me because I don't self-promote on the show. But in order for us to continue to bring you great shows like this, great guests like Seth Godin and Jane Goodall and Ryan Emmons, we need to have support. You can become a sustainer for $8.34 a month. That's $100 a year. So please consider going to our website and helping move this thing forward and spread the good green word with us, because I know you're liking what you hear. So there you guys, my team, everybody on my team listens to these shows. So I did it. I made a shout out for the growth and sustainability of Mrs. Green's World. So Ryan, where do we want to start?
Aloha.
And, oh, I know I love saying that. Aloha and mahalo. I mean, I love Hawaii. It's ridiculous. It's almost cliche how much I love Hawaii. So let's talk about, I cracked up on it, on one of the tabs on your website is taste and terroir. And I think I'm saying that right. Who made this delightful discovery and what is it? It's very cool.
Yeah, so I mean, this is, it's very cool. It's, you know, some might consider it a little bit bougie.
I thought it was hysterical.
But it really is, you know, it's wine, you know, I think it all starts with the fact that wine really is known for its complexity and its taste.
Right.
But really, waters as well are very much complex through their mouthfeel and through their terroir. And so that's in a lot of ways, though, there's a lot of similarities. So taste and terroir for really both wine and water are determined by a number of different things. So minerality, orientation, virginality, and vintage.
I loved it.
And those things apply to water as well.
I just loved it. This is like drinking a fine wine with your sushi.
Yeah, and it's not exactly, again, like it's one of those things where, you know, I'm a little bit hesitant because I don't want this, like, premium bottled waters to, you know, it's a very hard line to promoting premium waters being this, like, exclusive high-end product and getting to the point where water becomes wine, which is realistically, it is the reality of the next 100 years as it becomes a more precious resource. But it's still something that if you ever have the chance and if you ever taste a number of different waters, you know, some people can notice the difference, some people can't, but there really is a growing movement of people that can't, especially when you're talking about single source premium waters.
Right.
And it's quite remarkable.
And I think it brings up the question, and I can hear the reluctance in your voice, because there is that real issue of the cost factor and what I call the great divide. You know, you have the dichotomy of you're bringing really good water to people in Africa who have none without your bringing it, and you know, the pump aid. And then you have people in the United States with two or three kids that can't afford bottled water, or I might even go be so bold as to say should not be buying bottled water, that if they buy a good, safe, reusable bottle or two, it's a good economic choice for the family, it's saving on waste, and on and on. What's your response to that? And I know it's a tough spot because you sell bottled water, great bottled water, but isn't there a point at which you would say to someone, you know, my water's great, but you really should get a reusable bottle, that's the best choice?
Yeah, I mean, so I, first and foremost, it's really based off of, it's based off a number of different factors. You know, for Waiakea, the hope is that, first of all, we have a specific target demographic that, you know, for those that are consuming bottled water and that need that convenience, because again, it's not going away for so many people, that they can at least pick a zero impact product that is also benefiting people that don't even have that option,
right?
Let alone even the infrastructure for municipal tap water. And so, you know, there are plenty of people that are never going to drink bottled water, period. And that's not necessarily, you know, who we are catering to, and
right,
nor who we are really accessible to. And I totally promote that. If you have a solid water infrastructure, I totally think you should drink tap water, and it should be available for everyone.
Right.
But the issue is that throughout the world, and even in certain places throughout the U.S., although for the most part, we do have very safe, reliable municipal systems, we really do have issues with our infrastructure. And those issues are a number of different things. They are, first and foremost, the fact that a lot of them are very old and outdated.
Right.
And so if you actually look at the water that's
so true,
you know, going into your glass, do you know how much water is being wasted during that journey to get that liter of water into your glass because of the leaky pipes and because of your leaky infrastructure? It's actually really significant. And it's really something that's not taking into consideration when a lot
really,
of people
really
demonize
so
bottled water. And we need to improve it. And then the other thing is, you know, we really, with tap water, so I mean, another thing that people don't realize is that, unfortunately, tap water has a lot of metals in it, depending
yes.
on where you are.
Yep.
You know, I'm blessed in certain places in California, you know, we do have great water. You know, New York prides itself in its bottled water, in its tap water,
right,
even
right.
though we did just get voted, we did just win a taste test with New York City
a
tap water
taste test?
And
I
bottled
love it.
Water. It was, yeah, it was actually on Good Morning America, which was hilarious.
Very cool.
And so, you know, that happens. But the issue is, again, for a lot of these sources, you have a lot of metals because of the piping and the infrastructure. And also, unfortunately, you have fluoride. And fluoride really is the nastiest stuff on the planet. And my hat is off to Portland for removing fluoride from its municipal system. But those are just the things to kind of be mindful of and look at. Because, you know, while I think water should be accessible to everyone, and it is so much cheaper to have that, you just really can't compare, you know, municipal tap water to water that's from a single source that might have health benefits, that is, you know, really for, it's just for a different person and a different market. And we're trying to change that market so it's a little bit better, because that market isn't going away. That's really the main thing.
I hear that. And you have this bigger vision of, and again, it's like I when I interviewed Seth Godin last week, we talked about the disappearance of the middle class, the shrinking middle class, and what is counter to making that happen, and the great things with technology and tech companies that hopefully will stem that tide. But what you're saying is so true. If you are poor and you can't afford bottled water, and you live in a community that has really crappy tap water from corroded pipes, it's like, okay, let's stick it to the poor people again. I mean, that's true. I have a social service background, so I'm like, okay, there's just not a win in that situation. So,
oh my God, look what just happened in Flint, Michigan. It's a disaster, you know, and they can't figure it out. And so, you know, and but again, I don't want to highlight that, because I don't want to like seem like that's happening everywhere. You know, we are blessed in the United States, but that's happening everywhere else.
And it's just like, I do a presentation and I say there at today, 287 toxins found in a baby's umbilical cord when they're born. And unfortunately, it's part of the water that is being ingested by the mothers. It's just true. It's a very sad truth. And that is, to me, a startling statistic. Let's shift a minute for, put the focus a little bit on green jobs. It's such a great conversation, can evoke such controversy. Lots of people don't know what they're talking about when they're talking about green jobs. When I read all about your company, it feels to me that you have a bona fide green job insignia you could put on your website. You're providing lasting, sustainable jobs for community. Is that fair? True? Accurate?
You know, I love that. I love that. And you know, I really do believe that we are trying to be this movement, even though, you know, there are tons of naysayers out there.
No, you are being the movement.
I don't really necessarily... Yeah, but the thing is, and you know as well as I do, there are plenty of people that, you know, they won't look at kind of all the statistics and all the different things and everything that I've said.
And no, they're going to say you're doing it for the money. It's all about profit. I mean, there's those people, no matter
exactly
what you tell them, they don't let facts
And I always understand, and those people are, exactly, and those people are never going to go away. But the whole thing is that, you know, so we're working on developing a new facility that's going to be LEED certified. And so that, I think, would put us in a position where we would be more likely to get, you know, to have that certification on our website. But I think that's a little bit much to a certain extent. But, you know, people that we are part of this, the good part about Hilo and what we're doing with this new facility is that we're actually part of an enterprise zone because... unfortunately, Hilo and the Big Island has a high rate of unemployment.
Right.
And so we actually are going to be bringing a number of jobs to the town of Hilo. And so that's what I'm actually really excited for.
And they are really and truly lasting jobs. I'm excited for it, too. And, you know, the thing about Flint, Michigan, like, it's kind of you don't even want to talk about it. And when I read about the city's response, I mean, they are saying things like the issues of odor and color are separate from the question of whether it meets federal standards. Well, who wants to drink water that stinks? Do you know anybody?
Yeah, that stinks or comes out
brown?
Dirty. It's like no one should have to deal with that, you know?
It's
that's what we pay our taxes for.
I mean, it's really disgusting. It's so awful. And I think we're going to be reading more and more and more about it. So believe it or not, we have a little bit of time left, like about 5 more minutes. What is the, tell me the holy grail story of getting in Whole Foods. That's what I call it. What was it hard to get in Whole Foods? It's always hard to get in Whole Foods, right?
You know, it's always hard to get into Whole Foods, but if you have a good product and you believe in it and you have a certain amount of charisma.
And tenacity.
You know, it's really possible. It's like you can do anything with those attributes. And in my case, you know, we have that, and I have a great team, and, you know, I was put in front of the Whole Foods buyer, and we did our pitch, and and they loved our product and what we were about, and we really fit. We crossed so many of the boxes,
right?
In product requirements and the things that Whole Foods is seeking for its stores in terms of ethics, sustainability, natural health, and our mission statement. And so that really helped. That made it kind of easier for most companies, because let's be honest, there's so many bottled water companies, there's so many beverages in the world, and there's a finite place of shelf space, finite amount of shelf space. And so I hope that actually more retailers, and actually this is happening, there are more retailers that are prioritizing, natural, organic, sustainable products.
I love it, and who they're going to put on the shelves.
And it's a movement that's, yeah, exactly. And, it's going, that's actually seeping into the conventional channel and not just natural. So we're seeing Safeway is now having, a natural section in Kroger. And
right.
So I think it really is a positive movement.
It's growing.
But again, the thing is it's still really hard in a lot of those channels for smaller companies that, can't pay for shelf space. And so that's also why Whole Foods is fantastic. And why the natural channels can be fantastic is because you aren't necessarily having to deal with that type of competition. Because the little guys, we can't afford all that.
And I'll tell you what, I go back to Isabella's Ice Cream. We are friends with Crystal and Dominic, and you get that first big order, and it's ice cream. So think about that. You are now in the shipping business, the production business, and I would go and see Crystal at one of her events, and I'd say, how's it going? She said, I don't even know what's going to go. Like, I can't even, you have to find a shipper that you believe in that's going to keep it at the same temperature, that makes sure it doesn't melt, and then go back to, its frozen state, because then it's crystallized. Oh my gosh, going to Whole Foods is a big deal, and you have to have all of your ducks in a row, even with water. So congratulations. Another comment I wanted to make is that I think it's great that you talked about your team, because I was going to ask you, are you all by yourself, which I know the answer is not. Whoever we had to connect with us for your person, Melanie, was wonderful to work with. You have a great team that you've put together. I think we have actually lost Ryan. So we will try to call him back.
No, I accidentally, I'm here. Sorry.
You pushed mute. You moved. I told you not to move.
That is cheeky.
God, that would be so sad after such a great show.
I was actually, I the only reason why YAKA has done so well is because I am so blessed to have an incredible team and a team that believes in what we're doing. And thus it kind of drives us harder to achieve. And we're really young. We're the youngest team in the industry. We position ourselves with some incredible advisors to kind of help us navigate and slowly kind of assembled some really experienced vets. It's at the end of the day, I and YAKA would be nothing without my team, like truly.
And it's so great to say that to me. That's one of going to be one of the lasting factors and key to your success. I mean, I was at the Social Venture Network conference a couple of months ago.
Oh, really? I was a bridge entrepreneur at SVN 2 years ago.
Stop it. I want to say shut the front door. Oh, my God. Seriously. So I am like a social venture. I liken it to people. I say, well, when you go there, it's kind of like going to wherever, I'm an avatar, and I go into this bubble for 3 days with like-minded, forward-thinking, let's make change happen, people, and then I have to come out of the bubble. I have to come back to Earth. So one more minute. Ryan, I'm glad we came around to that. I'll certainly tell my friend Deb Nelson from SVN. We crossed paths with another bridge person. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Make it a great green day. Our show next week is going to be another great one. We always have great shows. And of course, it's I don't even know what I'm going to talk about on the show. It's Dane Wigington, and he is a big geoengineering believer and brilliant scientist. So we don't tell you what to think. I'm going to have to think a lot before that show. Everybody, make it a great green week. Check out Ryan's website. Follow them on Facebook. And don't forget to think about becoming a Mrs. Green's World Sustainer. Ryan, thanks for showing up and all you're doing. I'll be watching.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. It was great. And I'm looking forward to staying in touch.
Okay. Same here.